How are you today?
I am great. I'm glad I can be second team today.
Well, you were going to be in here anyway. We just had we're just kind of shifting dominoes around, so we'll do that. Let's start, first of all, just kind of to catch people up. Of course, the legislature has not been able to successfully solve school financing. They've fought with it. They had it in the courts. Well, I don't know if it's a life raft for them or not, but the Supreme Court says now we're going to take a look at it. So this legislature is not going to have to take on public education at all during this session. As a superintendent in Texas, how does that make you feel?
Well, it's frustrating, Scott. It really is, because, you know, with the funding formula that's out there, nobody understands it. You can go to Austin and you can ask questions, and the people that craft the laws, I don't think they understand it when you ask them questions. School funding is a source of a subject across the state of Texas. The last session, Bryan received $5 million more than they received 2 years ago, and then the second year. So we got $8 million more than we had the previous session. But that's still less than the previous biennium. So when you ask them about equability and you ask them about funding formulas, there's really not an answer. Nobody can give you a definitive answer. We don't know. Here we are. We're starting the session today. We're in it right now. And we're trying to form a budget for next school year to bring to the school board. And we don't have any idea and no inclination as to how much we're going to get, what we're going to be cut, we don't know. So it's always shooting in the dark and trying to hit a moving target in the dark. We don't know what that number is. And so it makes it very difficult to hire. It makes it difficult to talk about programming when you don't know the funding that you're going to have for the upcoming school year. And here we are in February.
Now, Clark Ely had said he was with us a couple of weeks ago. And of course, the legislature patted themselves on the back. And they said, well, no, we came back and we gave you some of the money back from that shortfall. Now, what happened in the case of College Station is they got about 19 cents on the dollar back. How did Bryan make out in that?
Well, we didn't break it down by the dollar. We just looked at it from a standpoint of in that session, that 2 years, that buy-in, we received $8 million more, which was still less than our previous session. So we haven't broken down by the dollar, but it was still less.
Now, by the same token, you're in the dark, but they're also going to want you to be doing some more things. Pre-K is one of those.
Yes, sir.
Tell me how that would impact BISD.
Well, if we knew the entire law and actually saw the language, I could give you a better answer. But I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit about this pre-K Bill 1100, House Bill 1100, what it is. Governor Abbott has come in with, and we do applaud the governor on this, which is he has a early childhood agenda, which is get the child prepared in pre-K, kinder, first, and second before they get into the high-stakes testing in third grade. And we applaud that in public ed. But he did start this conversation about House Bill 1100, where it talks about pre-K all day. Now, we and Bryan are 100% behind that legislation, depending upon what the language is in that bill, because what it really says and all the abstracts, the governor wants pre-K funded all day long if you meet the stipulations that the governor says that he wants done. We don't know what those stipulations are. So while we and Bryan would encourage and we want House Bill 1100 to pass, depending upon the stipulations, because it could be more testing, it could be more mandates on certain things. You're going to use a certain type of textbook. You're going to serve a certain type of assessment. We don't know what that is. Currently, we're half day. And so what happens is a child comes in, and remember, if you qualify for pre-K, you're economically disadvantaged, and you're really struggling at the time. A half-day pre-K, these kids come in, and they work roughly 90, 120 minutes a day on academics, and then we feed them. They have a PE requirement, and then it's time for them to go home. So 120 minutes a day doesn't get a child who's a little bit behind up. So we're four all-day pre-K, depending upon what these requirements are. And so we've heard Governor Abbott speak, and he says, we're for all-day pre-K if you do X, Y, and Z. We just don't know what X, Y, and Z are right now.
Well, in hard numbers, we're talking a large population in Bryan.
Oh, large population. And you think about it, if we were to go full-day pre-K, and going back to your previous question, which is funding, we would have to double our pre-K staff to meet the needs of our students in Bryan ISD. Well, if we don't know how you're going to fund it, and we don't know what the stipulations are, we can't staff for pre-K full day. And so, again, we're shooting in the dark. And so it's a total guess. And so it makes it difficult on school districts.
For a second, then, just to one more thing in this, from a facility standpoint. Now, are those facilities purposed in a different way in the afternoons right now? And then if you ended up with all-day pre-K, then those facilities are going to have to be repurposed for that all day long.
Yes, what you have is, for pre-K students, they have the little toilets. They have the little sinks. If we were to go full-day pre-K, then, of course, then you would have to retrofit other classes that aren't retrofitted for pre-K, and you have to put the little potties in, you have to put the little sinks, and so that's another financial issue. So it's a whole lot of not knowing, and then we're trying to prepare right now, because here we are in February. When we start budget right now for the following school year.
This is what we call unintended consequences right there. you've got a lieutenant governor who is pro-voucher. He's made no bones about that at all.
Correct.
So as you, as a superintendent for a public school district in Texas, what's the future as far as vouchers in public school, and what does that do to you?
Well, I'm 100% not vouchers.
Surprise.
Yes. You know, what you see are these bills that are coming from the Senate is where it seems like they're all originating. It does come from Dan Patrick. He has been pro-vouchers even when he was in the Senate. Voucher bills and the money following the child has been a topic for years. It's going to the federal level at this point. There's a lot of people, a lot of traction going that public schools are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and I completely disagree when we talk about the rigor and the that we're having, like for math, we talked about earlier. We're doing a great job in public education, but this idea of the money following the child, it can go to anyone. You could open up a homeschool. I could open up a homeschool. I could open up a charter, and the money follows that child. But there's no talk about accountability for where this money is going in these charter schools, these parochial schools. Are you going to do the same test that public schools have to take? Are you going to take the same STAR exam? Are you going to have to be required to go pick up special needs students? Are you going to be required to do dyslexia? Are you going to be required to serve the special needs students? Are you going to be required to go pick them up in transportation like we have to? What are you going to do? What's the accountability for these vouchers? And nobody has ever talked about that. And so what you hear is, money follows the child, money follows the child. Okay, but what's the accountability? Because when you talk about Texas public education, all you hear about is, we want more accountability, we want more accountability. So it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek conversation. If the money follows the child to a homeschool, a charter school, a parochial school, where's the accountability? And they say, you know, the argument is, well, private schools are doing just as good, if not better, than public schools. Well, they don't take the same assessments we take. They're not held to the same standard that we are in terms of truancy. You know, the education code talks about a student in public school has to attend 90% of the time that the school day is offered. Well, let's play by the same set of rules, and then we'll see.
Can education be a consumer-driven market?
Oh, I think it can be, yes.
Under what circumstances? How can we do that?
I think it's going to go back to that whole voucher thing. If there is a situation where we're all playing by the same set of rules, until that comes, then no, it really can't be. It's not an equitable system.
Okay, let's talk Common Core for a minute. There are a handful of states, literally, not many at all, that are not Common Core states. Texas is not one. It seems to be clear. Of course, Governor Perry used that as a real talking point against this Washington administration. It appears that Greg Abbott feels the same way. I want to try to understand, what are the different standards? How is the standardized test that we have in Texas, how is that different from what Common Core is?
Well, I've not studied it a great deal in the fact that they've said from the very beginning we're not doing it. So we've got.
But don't you need to know what the other?
Well, and I do. But when I say I haven't studied it enough, I'm not an expert on the Common Core. The thing that the federal government seems to be trying to do with the Common Core is you're going to do the same thing across the entire country. Where in Texas, we've said, no, we're going to do it. We're going to do our own state assessments. We're going to do our own curriculum. It's an argument of federal getting into state. It's an argument of the federal government telling the states what they're supposed to do. And that hasn't flown in Texas. And so when you begin to look at Common Core, you see that it's not as wide, if you will, as some that don't have Common Core. The curriculum is not as long. It's a little bit more short, not as many things covered.
What's missing?
In the Common Core?
Yeah, I mean, if it's a little bit shorter, then what do you, I mean, is there an easy answer there?
No, I don't think there's an easy answer. I think it goes back to who's driving the curriculum. I think it goes back to who's actually devising the curriculum. There are people and there are bills out right now in Texas that are saying we want to reduce the number of student expectations and TEKS, if you will, in Texas. And we're for that, too. But as far as that goes, it's who's driving the curriculum, who's making the curriculum. And when you don't really know who that person is from the federal government, Texas doesn't want to do that. And I wouldn't either.
All right, so let's go back to this, at least what we've got here in Texas now. Texas Association of School Administrators met in Austin. I think you were probably at that meeting there.
I was.
And there was a lot of talk about additional teacher training for math. And that's great. But there, and again, even teachers who've been teaching math for a long time are going to be challenged by this, and there are holes right now in math curriculum for kids in lower grades. And I really strongly believe you've got to have the strongest foundation in third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade till you get to algebra. Because if you're not there when algebra hits, you're in trouble for the rest of your educational career.
Oh, yes. You have, with the new assessment coming out, you have, and the new standards, you have more student expectations that students are supposed to have now in math than they've ever had before. The problem with that is they say that we need more training. Well, when is that training going to be offered? Who's going to pay for it? And you have to weigh out, if the training is during the school day in Austin or even here, we still have to have the training. Who's going to provide it? And then the teachers are out of the classroom to go get the training to come back to teach the children. And the teachers need to be in the classroom with the children. And you have identified about 55% more student expectations in math right now in sixth grade than what they had the previous year. So there's a huge learning gap there. So, for example, if a fifth grade student, and the reason I know this, Scott, I have a sixth grade student.
Okay.
So as a fifth grade child, my child personally met all those standards as a fifth grader, did well on the math EOC, missed one question. He goes to sixth grade the next year. Now, as a parent, you're looking at this going, my child has done very well in fifth grade. They go to sixth grade because they've added 55% new student mm-hmm. expectations, which mm-hmm. puts in algebra already mm-hmm. Into sixth grade. My child and any other child who did well in fifth grade going into sixth grade is already behind.
There's that gap,
there's
that hole
gap,
right there.
That instructional gap that's there that we have to make up. And then on top of it, by the end of this school year, or really in the spring, our kids are given a state-mandated test over this material where there was that instructional gap that they'd never had that information. And we've had to, again, fly very quickly over a curriculum to get our kids supposedly caught up, if you will, to where those TEKS were for the sixth grade classes. So there's a frustration on parents, there's a frustration by administrators, and there's really a frustration with our teachers that you've gone from one year to the next and you've added 55% new TEKS to that sixth grade year. That's tough.
Yeah, what I have in front of me says, for instance, more than half of this year's sixth graders are expected to learn what was taught in last year in seventh grade, and about 40% of this year's third grade requirements weren't in the standards at all, but TEKS in higher grades assumes that students have covered this material.
And so
how can we accept TEKS in this form if you know that there's a gap back there?
I completely agree. And so what we're not getting, there's no buy-in. There's no collegiality. There's no collaboration, really, between what's going on in Austin with this curriculum being driven and what's going on in the classroom. You know, the teachers are the ones who teach. The teachers are the ones that know where the kids are. But when you get a curriculum that's mandated to you, and then if we don't follow it, then I'll be talking to you about accountability ratings.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you look at that and you think, well, darn, 55% new teachers in just six, and that's just sixth grade. We're not even gone into third grade, fourth grade, right. fifth grade. I mean, we hadn't even gone into those. And then to get the children ready for the sixth grade teachers, we're changing teachers in kindergarten. They've changed teachers in first grade and second grade. So the whole process is making the students to where, or the teacher, excuse me, to where they're just staying barely one step ahead of what's coming down from the state. And then from the professional development standpoint, how much time do we spend giving these teachers the materials that they need to teach these? How much time? You have a seven-period day in middle school. They have one conference period. Some might have some teaming. We've done some teaming. But you don't have the time to study the TEKS in order to teach them to the depth and the complexity to pass a test. And then if they don't do well on the test, we're talking about accountability ratings.
Boy, it sounds like a great commercial for school vouchers or some sort of non-traditional educational system. Tommy Wallace, the superintendent of Bryan, joining us. Let's take now. Let's go over and let's shift down to back local, because a lot of things obviously are happening in BISD. You got your bond issue passed. You've got a guy now heading up your construction. Let's talk a little bit about who he is, and so people will know that.
Jeff Windsor is coming to us from Spring ISD, well over 30 years experience in construction. He has headed up all the bonds, last three bonds from Spring ISD. All but one of them were still larger than the one we did in Bryan. Got a very good vita in terms of what he can do. He's going to bring a lot of expertise. He's going to bring a lot of resources to us. We can turn a lot of this project over to a guy that knows school business, knows school construction. So we're looking forward to having him. He starts Friday. That starts tomorrow. So we're looking forward to having him. He's already been in, looked at the plans, looked at the program, asked a lot of good questions, already working with the architect, talked with him. So I think we're really going to have a good product at the end of the bond with somebody like Jeff Windsor and his expertise heading it up.
Hammond Oliver was revolutionary when it started. You've decided to make some changes there. In the first 2 years, the kiddos will remain on their individual campuses rather than be on a common campus, at least according to the newspaper story over the weekend. Some pushback from some of the students saying that you're going to lose some of that feel that you have, because they're going to be on really three different locations rather than just one.
Yes. Well, we appreciate the students and their voices. We like that. We're glad that we'd like to hear what they have to say. The thing about it is, when they came to us, what the ones that were voicing their concerns, I don't think they were given all the information up front, probably the way we should have given it to them. The kids that are in 10th grade, 11th grade, and 12th grade for next school year, nothing changes for them. We're not changing the rules middle of the game like the Texas does for us. We're not letting them do that. They're going to continue to have the same program they've always had. It starts with the incoming freshmen, because currently what you do is you go through Hammond Oliver, which is a fantastic program. I want to make it very clear. It's not going away. It's just Hammond Oliver version 2.0. We're going to make it to where Hammond Oliver has more certifications, where you have not just CNA, but then you will start working on your RN. You can start working on that. You can work on phlebotomy, EMT. You can get certifications in all of these areas, and your clinicals are going to be more open, more broad. Instead of just saying you can pick one or two, we're going to open it up to you where you can get a lot of experience in a lot of different areas and a lot more certifications. You can get a CNA certification, say at Blinn, and you can get that in roughly 3-4 months. So we're going to continue the CNA program at Hammond Oliver.
Okay, what is CNA, so people understand?
That is Certified Nurses Assistant.
Okay.
And so with that, we want to continue to get students and have students 21st century ready, post-high school ready. So CNA will continue, but then we're also going to have the areas of billing, phlebotomy, EMT, other certifications out there as well. So we're just going to ramp it up in terms of certifications.
Okay. And then, I don't want to dive really deep into this, but I do at least want to get your comments, because you've gotten your report back from the Battelle Group having to do with pay. That's for people who came from the career ladder. Let me ask you right up front, how is this setup different than the career ladder that some older teachers have been in?
It's a little different. The career ladder went back to how a person did in their evaluation. And if that one individual who did the observation thought the person did well, they got a great evaluation, they got money. It's a little different. This is something that's coming from the state of Texas. We want to be on the cutting edge of this. We want to look into this. This was a board-driven decision. And Battelle for Kids It's where we're putting our money into, say, a teacher that teaches all EOC courses, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. If you teach a STAR-tested or EOC-tested subject, one of the recommendations from the committee was that you would get an additional stipend for those things. So if you're not an EOC-tested subject or a STAR-tested subject, you wouldn't get that stipend because there's a lot of pressure on teachers who have to teach and perform on this test, and more so than those teachers who aren't teaching a STAR-tested test. So that's one of the recommendations from the committee, was to give them a stipend, if you will, for STAR-tested subjects. One of the other recommendations from the committee was that we would, if you're in a campus or work in a campus that is a hard-to-fill campus or a at-risk campus, a really at-risk campus, there might be an additional stipend as well. And that's in be a lot of different phases, but the first phase we would look into is the phase of giving individuals stipends that teach the STAR test or teach to the STAR test or teach for the STAR test. That's what I should say.
Okay.
And then the individuals who are hard to fill spaces.
Now, the bottom line, and I'm glad the school board has something to be excited about. But I mean, the bottom line is then again, how are we paying for this, and what kind of a financial impact is this going to cause on the school district?
And that's where we're at in our financial discussions right now. So the board will have to decide from our presentations to them, our recommendations to them, how much money do you want to put into this? Because you have a couple choices. You can say we're going to put just X amount of dollars in it, and then whoever qualifies, or you can put in for we're going to put in a certain amount of money, and let me back up. And then if you have a certain amount of money for, and then who qualifies gets the money, or you can say, well, if they don't qualify, we're going to put in less money. It's a complicated thing as far as to explain on the radio how we're going to do it, but it's really a situation where the board has to decide, we have to decide how much money will be put in that, and that's the money that's going to have to be to stay put.
I guess what the listener wants to know is, what's that number?
Well, we're working on that. We're not done because we've been working on this 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
We're not to that final number yet. We've just taken it back to the school board to give them the first round of conversation. The second round of this is what they call a red team, where community members come in. We talk about the plan. They redlined it. Then we took it to the school board. The school board has now heard it. They're offering suggestions, and now what we do is we come back with a final number, and the board will either approve it, say add more to, take away from, and where this will fall on our budget, which, again, makes it difficult considering we don't know what money is going to come from the state of Texas.
Finally, kind of as an overview on this, I sense that Michael Williams does not speak for everyone who is in school administration as our education secretary here in Texas. What does the future hold I don't want to say a confrontational situation, but obviously a lot of people who are administrators are not happy with what's, and teachers are not happy with what's going on in Austin.
Well, Commissioner Williams has come in under Governor Perry's watch and has made it clear that he is for vouchers. He is for, it seems to be, additional testing. He is the Commissioner of Education, and he has to look out for all areas. And it's not just Texas public education. It is vouchers. It is public schools. Or it is homeschools. And he is the Commissioner of all, and he has to look out for the best interests of everybody. But there is a feeling out there that maybe Commissioner Williams isn't as pro-public education as what most public education would like.
Be a lot of people watching Texas, that's for sure.
There will be.
Thank you for the time this
Scott,
morning.
Thank you very much.
You bet. We've been talking to Dr. Tommy Wallace, who's the superintendent of Bryan ISD. The entire interview will be archived on our website at WTAW.com.